Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Welcome to all my returning listeners and welcome to any new listeners. Today, I am talking with Laura Kenny, allergy mum and blogger at dairyfreekids.ie. Hello, Laura. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nina. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you very much for joining me. So the first question I like to ask everybody is, tell me about your allergy journey. Tell me where it started and what happened.
Okay, so I have two children. They're 8 and 5 now, two boys, Oscar and Oren. And when Oscar was about 1, he started to be up. He'd go to bed normal time, and about 40 minutes later, he'd wake up with a pain in his tummy. His tummy would be all hard, and he'd be crying and crying and crying, and there'd be no consoling him unless you were able to get him to pass wind. So we'd be walking the floors with him, rubbing his tummy, cycling his legs, all those kind of methods, and eventually take up to an hour. But if he managed to burp, he would immediately relax and then fall back asleep, and would sleep usually the rest of the night. And that was going on for a good 8 or 9 months. And I had brought him to a GP, and I had brought him to a pediatrician at a time as well, but they both said he'd grow out of it, or that, you know, it was kind of dismissed. It wasn't thought to be here. Any of that wasn't even suggested. Eventually I decided that it might be something he's eating, and to try eliminating dairy, because my sister has a dairy allergy, and I thought maybe, sometimes they say it's hereditary, and it was worth a try. So I put him on to soya milk, and after about a week, he was so much better. It's just not a bother. And then I took off. I then went through any other foods that he ate during the day and made sure that there was nothing containing milk. And I quickly found that if he had something, even with a small amount of milk in it by accident, that he was back to being in pain again. So he's basically been off dairy ever since. I did bring him to a specialist at around 2 years old, and he was not allergic to anything by means of a skin prick test. But he said he was likely to be intolerant, and to try him again with milk in 6 months to a year, a small bit. And we have tried him every, I suppose, year or so. And at about 4.5, we found he's able to tolerate a small bit.
Okay.
But if he does have more than a small bit now, his asthma will get bad. He'll get quite wheezy. So I'll allow him, say, if he's going to a birthday party or it's a special occasion, he can have maybe a slice of cake or, you know, one thing containing dairy, as long as he doesn't overdo it.
Okay.
And he's dairy-free at home the rest of the time as well. And then his brother came along when Oscar was 3, and he had severe reflux, silent reflux. So again, that took a while to diagnose. And I also suspected a problem with the milk, but because the reflux is there, it was quite complex to try and figure out. But I also took him, I stopped breastfeeding at 2 months because he was so uncomfortable lying down to be fed, that I could prop him up better with a bottle. And then I think I took him off dairy at about 3 months. And again, he hasn't looked back, and he's quite sick still if he has dairy. So a very odd time, I guess, if he has something that's a may contain dairy and it actually does, or if, you know, accidentally he might get dairy, he'd still be quite sick for a few days afterwards. So he's also off it.
And then I know we were talking before we started a recording about how, you know, the kind of the process or lack of process in Ireland, because you're based in Ireland. Can you tell me a little bit about those difficulties that you've had over your kids' lives and diagnosis?
Sure. I know a few allergy bloggers in the UK, and I know from speaking to them and also from interviewing some people in the UK that there seems to be kind of a set process if you're referred on from your GP with an infected allergy, that there's allergy tests done and you get to see an allergist, etc. But there doesn't seem to be any, you know, equivalent system here. I think it depends if your GP knows enough about allergies, you know, or even there isn't that many places to be referred to. Mm-hmm. And we certainly weren't referred to anybody. I was told things like he'd grow out of it, or that, you know, and he was a happy, you see, both children thrived and both children were happy and, you know, in good form during the day. So anytime you were bringing them to a GP, they looked the picture of health, you know?
So
there seemed to be kind of a lack of process. And even I see, you know, in the UK, there's the milk allergy ladder, for example, which is a way of weaning children back onto milk if they've had an allergy, and you can kind of do it step by step so that, you know, if they reach step three, which is, I think it might be milk and baked goods, tolerate that, but they can't tolerate step four, that they could still always have milk or baked goods containing milk an odd time, and that would be okay for them. But there doesn't seem to be an equivalent, a kind of a strategy for diagnosis or a step-by-step. This is, you know, that you'd get referred to an allergist or a dietitian or somebody that could, you know, could explain to you what to do, really. I found, you know, a lot of the information I found out was all through my own research. And, you know, even the suggestion of taking my child off milk was my own suggestion. Yeah. GP was happy for me to do it, but, you know, it was kind of like troubleshooting it myself, realizing to keep a food diary myself, all that kind of thing. So it would be great to see it being, you know, I suppose easier for parents of young children, because ultimately the child suffers, you know. I still feel guilty about the 9 or 10 months that he was screaming in pain every night. Now I know he was under two and he'll never remember it, but you know, it's not, you know, it's hard to see your child in pain.
But I guess for any parent who's going through this, or you know, is trying to diagnose their child's allergies or intolerances, if you don't know, you can't do anything about it, and it's not for lack of trying or seeking help. It's just you haven't found that thing that
actually. I was very lucky that it was the first thing I eliminated. My next step would have been to try and eliminate gluten, which is more difficult, obviously. But you know, we found it straight away by elimination. A bit more help and support for parents in that situation would be great. And I think, you know, allergies are, the amount of allergies is growing all the time, and people do need to be more aware, GPs included, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there are so many people I've had come on the podcast and so many people I've talked to who have had difficult times with GPs, who, when you have some sort of, you know, problem and it comes down to a food, most of the time they don't believe you the first time round. Is quite hard and kind of makes you question your trust in GPs, which is not good in the long run.
No, it's not. And I'm inclined to try and troubleshoot other things, which, you know, it's not good. I'm not medically trained.
But you know what, as a parent who's watching their child in pain, or as a person in pain, you have to do something.
And if, for sure,
and if you're not getting the help where you assume you would, you just have to rely on yourself and be the detective.
Yeah.
So now, can you tell me a little bit about you know, once you figured out that dairy was the problem, how did you start re-educating yourself about, you know, feeding your boys?
Yeah, well, when I first took Oscar off, and I thought, okay, we changed the milk. I knew about obviously butter, ice cream, anything like that. Well, I suppose he's generally eating ice cream at that stage. But that all stuff is obvious. But then the likes of, you know, packet ham or certain biscuits or crackers, certain things that really should have, milk should have no place in them, but yeah, they did have milk. And, you know, I found that out by trial and error over, I suppose it took a few months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there was very few resources online, and that is why I started my own blog in the first place, was to kind of share the knowledge I was building up. But there was, you know, if you needed something, it was just go and find it, go and see if it exists, and if it doesn't, learn how to make it. And mm-hmm. that's kind of the attitude I went in with. And, you know, I kind of made a rule that if you were having a meal or a special occasion in our house, that everything on the table would be suitable for the boys, and because it's their house, and I didn't want them to, you know, ever have that feeling of being left out mm-hmm. while they're here. So I learned, you know, I was already interested in cooking and baking, but I would do, I suppose, the minimum, or do what I had to do. But I expanded what I cooked and baked, and, you know, made sure they weren't left out. And if there was something they wanted, or I wanted to give them that wasn't dairy free, I'd make it. So
mm-hmm.
the one of the big things as well was learning how to read the labels. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different names that can mean milk. So kind of educating myself on all that stuff, I think I did find that online. And just, again, you kind of build up by the third or fourth time you've gone around the supermarket, you know which products to pick up.
Yeah.
And it becomes easier. And it's quite daunting at first, but it does, you know, it does become easier quite fast.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big challenges was trying to explain to the creche.
Uh-huh.
Because there was, you know, several... There was milk that he couldn't have, but he also used to be, I'm trying to think now. I think there was another couple of foods that just didn't agree with him.
Yeah.
Mm. And so he had a list of a couple of things, and then, you know, they'd be, I don't know, milk allergies didn't seem to be as common or as commonly known. And then, you know, people don't really understand sometimes that you're telling them, no, they can't have milk, and they might be afraid to give them anything at all. So say bring all his food in, or, you know, the first creche we were in, or he was in, they were great. They had their own chef, and if they were making pancakes, they'd make him special ones, that kind of thing. That was just wonderful. But not everywhere has the same kind of grasp of allergies, and that was a challenge as well when they're very young, because they can't speak up for themselves.
Mm. And then how did you manage when they changed to primary school?
So primary school, luckily Oscar had kind of run out of things a little bit, which, you know, I said earlier that he's able to have a small bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of great sending them off to school, because that worry, that constant worry, wasn't there.
Yeah.
Now, there was days with cake sales, and I'd tell them, you know, here's your own buns, or I'd send in buns, and I'd say, make sure you buy your own ones. But like a five-year-old being brought into a hall full of cakes for 5 minutes, being able to find his own ones, do you know, that kind of thing? And then that's kind of scary. But again, explained to the school, I spoke to the teacher and made sure, you know, if they were having something with dealing with something with chocolate, and they've done baking and stuff in his class as well, just that if they let me know the day before, I can provide his own ingredients, or, you know, if it's a party or something, I can send in chocolate or whatever he needs. So I kind of just have worked with the school with that anytime that he needed it. And then Oren started this year, or last year, and he's, you know, it's been good as well, except I think one day they did have, might have been around Easter, I think they got little chocolate eggs. So he just brought his home and he didn't have any. So he was feeling very sorry for himself. No. He's always happy if I give him something later on, but obviously if I'd known in advance, I could have sent him in, you know, some sort of substitute, if not the very same as what he'd be having as I could, you know?
Yeah.
But speaking to the child, letting them understand as much as they're able to for the age they are,
yeah,
I think is really important so that they can speak up for themselves. They do need to know about their own allergies when they're going to school. There's just so many people that deal with them day to day.
Yeah.
And, you know, like say the teacher's out and there's a substitute teacher, you might know that until the child comes home and tells you, or, you know, if they're like my boys, they'll never tell you. You know, so you need to try and, you know, without scaring them, if they're if they're anaphylactic or, you know, very severe allergies, you need to explain as much as they can, you think they can deal with. And, you know, even telling them what to do if there's an issue or if they think they've had something by accident, you know, to tell someone, that kind of thing. So the more communication you can have with your child, I guess, before they go into the big bad world of primary school, the better. I think, again, in the UK, I might be wrong now, but do they start at 4 in primary school?
Yeah, like 4 yeah. Turning 5.
Okay, because it's 5 here. It's, well, it could be, yeah, it could be about the same or it could be a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so, I mean, they're at a young age, but they do grow up very fast that first year of primary school regardless. So,
yeah. And then how do you have dairy in your home then?
Yeah, we do. Ironically, my husband lives on, or grew up on a dairy farm.
Oh!
We live on a site that was part of the farm. So I can see like the milking parlour and everything from my window as we speak.
Oh.
Now there is no dairy cows there anymore. But, you know, when I visited my husband's parents for the first time, you know, there was a big jug of milk on the table that was taken straight from the tank out in the milking parlour. Like it was just, you know, milk was a big thing in their house. It was taken for granted. And I would drink milk myself, not a huge amount or anything, but I've never had a problem with it. So there is dairy in the house. I think when the kids were smaller and I used to do their kind of batch cooking and all that, I would have a lot more labels and stuff on stuff
mm-hmm.
that was safe for them. And like, even when it's nearly always me doing the shopping, but I might put stickers and things in the fridge so my husband mightn't give them by accident,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing, because he wouldn't be as au fait with the products as I am.
Yeah.
And I guess we're kind of a bit more lax about it now, but the kids' milk will be kept, you know, in a separate section of the fridge. And, you know, they're very aware of which one is theirs and that kind of thing. They have their own butter. They have, I wouldn't really have ice cream in the house for us, but so it's nearly always dairy-free ice cream if it's there.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have no problem helping themselves to that. that's it really. I mean, the other kind of things like treats, like I am a chocoholic, I'm afraid.
Me too.
So if I have chocolate, I would generally have it hidden anyway from myself as much as from them. And actually if there's dairy free chocolate, that's hidden too, so that they don't eat it all in one go. Yeah, but no, it kind of works okay. I think, obviously, I think gluten, you know, it would be kind of harder to have both side by side, maybe. If it was a nut issue or, you know, I'd be banning them from the house, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. So I'm happy enough that they exist side by side here, but I don't know. I don't know if my husband had put up with zero milk at all. like he wouldn't put the soya milk in his tea if we ran out of cow's milk. So let's just put it that way, you know?
Yeah, well, soya milk does taste very, very different to cow's milk.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, with my nuts allergy, my parents had nuts in the house. My mum loves peanut butter and she wasn't going to give it up just because I was anaphylactic. But in a way, yeah, so it worked. But we had a special system in my house of how she ate. She had a special system for eating it to make sure, you know, it went from knife to toast to her mouth and then didn't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Or the plate, or even keep, she tried to keep it off the plate as well. So there was this minimal spreading. Yeah. And also, you know, there's a special box in our baking cupboard labeled nuts. So I knew never to go into that. And then my mum would always keep her chocolates hidden away. But I think as I grew older, she had more in the house.
Yeah.
Than when I was little. But there were still nuts around. And she always showed me what they were whenever she got them out so that I always knew what they looked like, what they smelled like.
Yeah, I kind of see the point of that too in terms of you knowing what it looks like or knowing this product contains nuts if you see it out and about, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think
because you can never be in a clean environment outside the home where you're not going to come across nuts or,
exactly, you know. Yeah.
So it really reflects real life.
Yeah, and I think in your son's interview, you had a lovely way of putting it. It was like knowing the language of your allergen, and that's exactly it. And I think that's what my mum wanted me to know, because nuts can be labelled like milk in so many different ways that you never know where you're going to find it. And I mean, some of the weirdest places I found nut warnings are on meat packets. And I'm like, why are there nuts in this, like, cured meat or in the, like, you know, the sliced meats you get in the supermarket for sandwiches? I'm like, why are there nuts on this? Or why is there a warning?
I've recently found out why there's milk in the chicken packets. Uh-huh. Because that they bleach it in milk before, so to make it look white. But I still haven't worked out why it's in the ham. But it's only one or two brands, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, we'll get into industrial cooking knowledge and know-how through allergy. Well, this is great. And so I think the last question I want to ask you to kind of wrap up is, tell me your three top tips for other parents who have gone through the similar sort of situation. What would you advise parents who they kind of know what their child may be allergic to, but they haven't got an official diagnosis? What would you suggest that they do?
Okay, the biggest thing and the most important thing is to keep a food diary and write down exactly what they're eating, what time, any kind of reactions you notice, or, you know, anything like that, and have it all written down in black and white before you go to see a GP or someone, so that your sleep deprived brain isn't, you know, starting to doubt yourself the minute you start talking about it, you know. So you have it written down, you've got, you know, what you want to say. Actually write down what you want to say as well. It's quite a good tip for going to see a health professional. My second tip then is to, you know, I've kind of learned the hard way to go with your own gut. If you think there's something wrong with your child, and I know there's the question a lot of doctors might ask, which is, oh, you're a first-time mother and you're kind of put down as not knowing what's going on, and, you know, being tired and maybe having PMS, or not PMS, PND, postnatal depression, or, you know, that's all assumed before they kind of will actually look at what you're saying about the child. And it can be very difficult, but do keep fighting for, if you think there's an issue. Again, having stuff written down will help with that one as well. And the third one is, let me see now, before, you want kind of tips before they're diagnosed.
Yeah, like who, for something like going through your situation, looking back on it, what would your advice be?
I think I would have pushed harder and gone, you know, maybe gone bypassed the GP and gone to a specialist sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe, you know, I don't know. It's really hard to say that I would have done that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you really feel there's something wrong there and you're not getting heard, try someone else, try a different GP, try, you know, a different health professional, or go straight to a consultant. Obviously, I guess if you don't know what's wrong, you don't know which type of consultant to go to. So you do kind of really need the GP, but keep fighting for it anyway. That would be my advice.
Well, that's excellent advice. And I think sometimes parents and anybody needs to remember that, whether they're like figuring out their allergies as an adult or the parents figuring out their allergies of their children, because sometimes when a doctor tells you, oh, don't be silly, you think, am I really being silly? I don't think so,
yeah,
but I
for sure.
Yeah. So I think that's really, really good advice. And Laura, oh yes, before we do wrap up, tell me how your blog started. Tell me what your blog is and how it started.
Okay, my blog is dairyfreekids.ie, and I started it just because I was kind of making up recipes, or, you know, changing recipes to make dairy-free things for the boys. And because I was doing so much research into what products were safe, etc., I decided to start writing it all in a blog. So that started in 2012, and it's still going strong. Well, I don't have as much time to blog anymore, but it's, you know, there's new recipes up there and new interviews. And every month I do a product watch with kind of a few new things I've found in the supermarkets that month. So people seem to find it useful, and it keeps me in touch with what's new out there as well. And I speak to lots of other people who are in similar situation, which is good.
Oh, fab. And where can people find you on social media?
On social media, I'm at Dairy Free Kids on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Laura, for joining me and talking all about your journey.
Not at all. Thanks very much, Nina.
So that was Laura Kenny. Thank you, Laura, for joining me. And Laura is the blogger at dairyfreekids.ie. I highly recommend, if you are trying to figure out what your children are allergic to, if you think they're allergic to something or intolerant, check out Laura's blog, especially for dairy allergies or intolerances. She's got some great recipes and help and information for you. Laura's son, also her eldest, Oscar, is going to be featured on our Allergy Kids mini series, which I'm putting together at the moment. I'm really excited to be publishing soon. So once I've got all those episodes together, you're going to be hearing from allergy kids of varying ages, from the age of 4 all the way up to grown-up allergy kids. So I'm really excited, and I'll keep you updated when we're going to be launching that little series. I'm hoping in time for the start of school, so around September, mid-September, something like that. So stay tuned. I'll let you know about the episode before, and that will be our looking at allergy kids and what they think. Now, talking about episodes, instead of looking at episodes in the future, have you checked out episode 41? I'm really excited because I'm running my first giveaway on the podcast. I mean, that's amazing. I'm really excited. This podcast has grown so much in the last 9-10 months. It's amazing. And now I'm doing a giveaway. So in episode 41, I talked with the wonderful Peter Oldman and Dr. Thomas Bonnair all about their book, The Real Causes of Allergies, and how you can solve your eczema, asthma, and allergy problems. And it was so illuminating listening to them, hearing about them. I've read their book. I think it's great. It's a really interesting book that you can learn about the science behind allergies and how we could actually make our allergy lives better and easier. And they have given me 10 copies of their book, The Real Causes of Allergies, and they've given me sets of the allergy-free detergents that Thomas Bonnair's company creates. So I have these to give away, and you could get your hands on them. So all you need to do is listen to episode 41, which you can find on iTunes, or go to the Eat Allergy Safe website, www.eatallergysafe.com/episode and the number 41. listen to the episode, because at the end you have instructions on how you can win, and then leave your answer in the show notes page. So that's go to www.eatallergysafe.com/episode41, go to the bottom of that page, and that's where you can leave your answer. Leave a note in the comments section. Make sure you leave your email address, because then I can get in touch with you so that to let you know whether you've won or not. And I have 10 of these books, 10 sets of allergy-free detergents to give away. So make sure you leave a comment with your answer, and then I'll be in touch. You have until September 30th to leave an answer. Make sure you do. We've already had a few entrants. So if there are 10 of you who've left your answers, then all 10 of you are getting a book. But if there's more, then you've got a different chance. So yeah, make sure you leave a comment. I have quick updates. I am going to be talking to you about a couple things, quick reminders. So last week I mentioned a load of updates because it was an incredibly exciting and busy week 2 weeks ago. So now I'm getting to it with organizing things. So chocolate book, I'm currently formatting the pages and it's looking more like a recipe book now, which is really exciting. I will be putting some stuff up on Facebook actually over the next couple of weeks for you to have a vote on, and I'd really appreciate any help with that. You know, any recipe formats you like reading better. As soon as I've designed a couple options for front cover, I'll put those up for you to vote on. So yeah, stay tuned. Make sure you follow me on Facebook. Eat Allergy Safe is the handle, and then that will be going in. There's also a folder with backstage pictures. Also, in about just over a week, I think 10 days from now, I will be having an article published in Free From Heaven magazine, which is really exciting. And I believe the magazine is going to be available online and also to buy from like Tesco's and Sainsbury's and WH Smith in the UK. So I've written an article all about how to tell people about your allergies. And for those of you who are regular listeners on the podcast, that was inspired by my episode talking about how to tell people about your allergies and my five-step method. So that, I think that was episode 11 or 22. I'd need to check that. But yeah, I'll leave a link in the resources on the show notes page of this episode. Next, I am definitely going to be teaching in a school in November, which is really exciting. Thank you, Natalie, for getting involved and getting in touch with me to get me to do that. Really excited, going to be teaching some kids how to cook, how to be aware of allergies, because this is all about raising awareness in schools and teaching children who don't necessarily have allergies and intolerances, but to be aware of them as they go into the workplace, as they go into, you know, further education. And if any of them are planning on taking up food as their profession, then this is something they're going to need to be aware of. Also, are you coming to the Allergy and Free From show in Liverpool, which is the first weekend of November, I believe the 4th and 5th? Well, if you are, please come and say hello, because I'm going to be speaking at the Allergy and Free From show. I'm still sorting out my topic and everything. Really excited to be working with the Allergy and Free From show team, and I'll let you know more details as and when I have them. So those are my announcements today. And before we end today, I'd like to thank the show sponsor, which is allergytranslation.com. So allergytranslation.com is a website that you can go to get allergy translations cards. And these are all to help you bridge the communication gap and barriers while you are abroad, so you can communicate your allergy needs. And actually, allergytranslation.com is great. I've actually got an Italian translation card. You get it straight away. You can download a PDF, which you can print out. So multiple copies, you get it in the language you paid for, as well as in English. And this is a Canadian website, actually. So you can get it for only $8 Canadian per card. And I believe in pounds, that is about £5. So make sure you go to www.allergytranslation.com today and have a look at your card. You can also get customized cards, so I'll tell you more about that next week, because they are next week's sponsors too. So thank you for joining me today. I hope you have a wonderful week. Make sure you stay allergy safe and remember that allergies aren't about missing out. They're about doing things differently. Bye-bye for now.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Modak. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.